Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we take a journey to Mérida, Mexico, with our guest, Kevin Donegan. Tell you a little bit about Kevin. Kevin Donegan grew up in rural Montana after finishing graduate school in 1987. He entered the Peace Corps, where he caught the travel bug. Kevin served in Belize from 1987 to 1989, and then returned to the U.S. and relocated to Portland, Oregon. He initially worked as a family counselor for a nonprofit, working with runaway and homeless adolescents for a little over a year. In 1990, he took a position at Reed College, where he started as the assistant director of Residence Life, moved up to the position of director of Residence Life, and then his last 2 years at Reed were spent as the director of community safety. Kevin left Reed College in 2000 and returned to the nonprofit he worked at right after leaving the Peace Corps to take over as director of runaway and homeless youth programs, where he oversaw homeless shelters, transitional living, and street outreach program. Kevin served on multiple national advisory boards for the federal government specific to services for homeless adolescents. In 2015, Kevin retired at 55 and started splitting his time between his home in Portland, Oregon, and Mérida, Mexico. So welcome, Kevin. Welcome to the podcast. And tell our audience why you chose Mérida as a city to live in Mexico.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for asking me to do this. This is going to be fun. Well, when I served in Belize in the Peace Corps, I lived in Central America on the Caribbean coast down there. I lived in Belize City, which back then was the armpit of the world. It was really horrific. And that's where I was stationed, working with an orphanage and at-risk and abused children within the country. And Peace Corps, like any other job, you get time off. And so some friends and I were going to go up to Cancun, and this is pre-cell phone, telephone days, that type of thing in Central America. And so we had arranged a date to go, and I met them up in their city in Orange Walk before heading over to Mexico. And I got up there, and of course, they couldn't leave. Something came up, which required them to stay a few extra days. And so I said, I'm just going to go to Cancun. I'll meet you there. Let's meet up at the Central Plaza 2 days from now. And so I headed up to Chetumal, which is the first city across the border, and hopped on a bus. And I didn't speak a lick of Spanish back then. Hopped on a bus, and I got on the wrong bus. I didn't go to Cancun. I ended up heading west, inland. And when I got off the bus about 7 hours later, off of these dirt roads, I realized I was in Mérida, Mexico. And I was a little surprised. Didn't know what to do, found a hotel room, was hanging out in the square that evening. There was some cultural performance going on, a dance recital or something like that. And I was sitting there watching it. And after it was done, I was thinking about, well, I need to get a bus ticket back over to Cancun because I've got to head back in that direction. I got up to leave and I was, again, 25, 26 at the time. This young Mexican man beside me, who was about the same age, asked me in Spanish what my name was. And I was like, oh, I don't speak Spanish. Sorry. And in perfect English, he said, well, I speak English. And he worked in the tourist trade in Mérida. And I spent the next week with him and his friends. He was a young gay man. I was a young gay man and had the time of my life. I'm telling you, it was just an exciting time to be in Central America at that time. And so I stayed there for the whole week and then went back to Belize afterwards and explained to my friends that something came up and I accidentally went to the wrong city. And again, this is the mid, late 80s. Not great to be out at that time. It was still a little questionable. And so when my boss at Reed College retired in 1999, 98, this was 15 or so years before I was going to retire, he had a home built in Puerto Vallarta. And I thought, well, where do I want to retire when I'm 55, 60, whatever? And the first city that came to mind was Merida, Mexico. I just loved the excursion and the time I had. And so I came down here in 2008, I think it was 2007, 2008, and spent a few weeks traipsing all over the city, looking at properties. My budget, we'll get into this later, but my budget was so horrifically low, and found a place, and then the rest is history. And so that's how I ended up in Merida.
That's such a great story. So you wound up there in it by accident, really.
You just got
on the wrong bus, said, oh, this is a great place. You met somebody and some people and had a great time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that that to me is destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the freaky thing. The hotel I stayed at is 3 blocks from the house that I bought.
Wow.
40 years later. And just a lot of similarities like that. It's just kind of weird.
It's kind of meant to be, I think.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Yeah.
It's somebody, yeah. Something the universe is trying to tell you something.
That's right. That's so, right. Don't ignore those signs when they fall in your lap.
That's right.
Yeah. And so what I do, I think this was partly the reason why you asked me to come on here, is I'm one of those snowbirds. I split my time between Portland, Oregon and Merida, Mexico. I stay in Portland in the summertime. It is, the Pacific Northwest is stunning in the summertime, warm and green. I have a home in Portland with a swimming pool, beautiful home. And then I come here in the wintertime to get out of the dreariness and rain of Portland and come down to Merida, where generally speaking, it's the dry season and it's not really hot, which I'll talk about later. And so it's, for me, it's a perfect combination of the two.
That's great. So right now, yeah. So you're in Merida now.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us geographically, where is Merida located within Mexico?
Yeah. If you're looking at Mexico on the far right side, the boot of Mexico, most people know where Cancun is. On the Caribbean there. That's the Yucatan Peninsula, that whole section there. And if you go inland, I'm going to estimate probably 120, 150 miles inland, and about 30 or 25 miles from the Gulf of Mexico is Merida, Mexico, right there. It's the capital of the state of Yucatan. It's really a centralized place where a lot of the archaeological Mayan ruins are located. It's a city of, the last I heard, it was over 1 million people. It's huge.
Wow.
It has all of the amenities of the United States, Costco's and Walmart's and Home Depot's and all of those type of things.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll talk about that later. I try to avoid those because there's a reason why people want to live outside the United States, but yeah.
Right.
And it's a lovely, lovely city.
So if you wanted to go to Cancun and drive to Cancun, what does it take? 4 hours?
Or? About 4 hours. Yes. Yes.
4 hours by car. Okay.
Yeah. I've been to Cancun a number of times. I tend not to go. It's such a huge worldwide tourist destination.
Tourist.
Everything is catered for tourism in that area. Understandably so. If you've never seen the Caribbean Ocean, it's stunning. It's mesmerizing
yes.
to look at.
So clear. Yeah,
it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how far would you say are the beaches if you wanted to go to the beach?
So I'm probably 25, 30 miles from the closest beach town. It's called Progreso.
Okay.
And where Progreso is on the Gulf of Mexico, I don't see it as a place where I'm going to hang out in the water. It's just the Gulf and the water's usually cloudy, dirty, that type of thing. You've got to get a little bit further away east in Sisal or much further over by Tulum or the Caribbean to really have those beautiful crystal blue ocean waters.
Crystal clear, yeah.
Yeah. But if you like the beach in the summertime, that's where a lot of locals go to because the temperature is much cooler on the beach than it is inland. And so many people have a summer cottage over on the beach, a lot of expats. When I talk about expats, a ton of Americans as well as a ton of Canadians. If you're going to the coast, it seems like I meet more Canadians than I do Americans that live on the coast.
Yeah, they want to get away from the cooler weather.
Yes, yeah, yes.
And we want to get away from the heat.
That's right.
Okay, so tell us about Merida. Does it have a gay community? Do you have like a gayborhood or gay bars there? Or is it just all integrated?
I did a little Google search prior to this. And so I've been here 15 or so years. And the longer I've been here, the less I get out into the community. I become more of a homebody, got my set friends. I tend not to meet a lot of other people. So I'm thinking, gay clubs. When was the last time I was at a gay club? And there are a ton. I just did a Google search and there's probably 15 or 20 within the city. When I was going to them years ago, there's a, it's called the Peripherical, which is sort of a highway that surrounds the city. So if you're going from the far north to the far south, it would take you a couple hours to drive through the city versus hitting the Peripherical and just swinging around. Back then, there were some huge gay nightclubs on the outside of the Peripherical where, if you remember that show, Queer as Folks, when when they would walk into the club and there was the pounding music and there were 200 people there, we'll multiply that times three or four, where you walk into this massive warehouse and there's ear-piercing music and there's a couple hundred plus gay men there, that type of club. And then they have bars in the city. There's one that opened up. I haven't been to it yet. I've just seen it from the outside and seen things on Facebook. A bar that opened up a few blocks away from me called, you'll love this, Dick's, D-I-X. There's a bar that I've been to four blocks away called Jorge's, which I haven't been there in years. But when I first went there, they would show porn movies in the back room, that type of thing. It was just sort of a low budget, local gay bar type of thing. And so there's lots of gay bars in town. I wouldn't say there's a gay neighborhood. If there is one, it's Centro. It's the historical district, because most people that want to relocate here want to move into the historical district. And that's a lot of gay people as well. It's a very gay friendly city. It's very common to see young men or young women holding hands. They have seats, cement seats in a lot of the parks that face one another. And it's common to have, mostly you see men and women who are making out on these chairs or in the parks, but you'll see occasionally a couple of young men, a couple of women. So it's not frowned upon, I should say, but also you need to be cautious as well, like anywhere. So just common sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For a population of a million or over, you would think there were some gay bars and gay people in the neighborhood. I know we're everywhere. So
yeah. And then also I thought about this once. I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun? And I don't know if many gay men have this fantasy, but it's like, wouldn't it be fun to open up a B&B or something like that? And I thought that would be fun. I can think of right off the hand, three B&Bs that are owned by gay couples. Across the street from me is, you asked about gayborhood. This was not intentional on my part where I bought my house. So I bought my house. Next door to me are two lesbians from Miami. They immigrated from Cuba and went to Miami and then ended up in Merida. A few houses away is another lesbian from the Miami scene. Across the street are two lesbians from Cuba who ended up in Merida. Around the corner is my hair salon, and it's a young gay man that works there. There's two lesbians that live a couple blocks away. So my point is, throughout the city is littered with GLBTQ.
We're everywhere.
It's everywhere. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Yeah.
That's great. It makes you feel comfortable.
It does. It does.
So how easy or difficult was it for you to make friends in Merida? So coming from the U.S., not really knowing much English when you started, was that a deterrent, or how did you assimilate into the Mexican culture? And did you make friends with locals as opposed to expats?
Yeah. Well, when I first came down here, when I went to look for my house, I stayed at a hostel that ended up being just about five blocks from my house. And I got to know the owner while staying there. And I was frustrated with the real estate buying process. So I'll put that on hold because I know we're going to get to some questions later about that. So I got to know him and his family really well. A lot of times I spend Christmas Eve and Christmas with them. I have a number of Mexican friends who I hang out with. Those individuals typically are fluent in English. They tend to be, for lack of a better word, sort of upper class individuals who have a broader educational background. The one thing that's nice about Merida is there's a lot of opportunities for expats to get together. There's an English library in town that provides, it almost operates as a social hub for the community. And so many people, when they first come, join the library. There's weekly events. They have monthly social event. There's a group called NAFTA, if you remember the North American Free Trade Association. There's a monthly NAFTA meeting that has nothing to do with NAFTA, but it's just called that because a lot of Canadians and Mexicans and Americans participate in that. And always, I equate to when I came down here, like I entered high school at that time, because I came in with hundreds of other expats moving to the area. And so I got to know those people and acquainted with those people. And as time went on, I sort of hung out with that class of people as far as we entered into Merida at the same time. So I really didn't meet a lot of new people because after a while I stopped going to the library. I was enculturated, knew the city, knew the system, had my friends, just had everything I needed and just wasn't in the market to look for new friends.
Right.
So, yeah.
Great. Great. So is speaking Spanish a must, would you say? Or could you get by, I mean, with English? And I know what I'd like to do, if I'm moving to a country, I'd like to kind of immerse myself and learn as much as I possibly can of their language because I'm in their country. But is speaking Spanish a must?
I wouldn't say it's a must, but it's really helpful because I have a good number of friends who don't know a word of Spanish, can barely say hola or gracias. And it's difficult for them. Nowadays with translation apps, it makes it easier, but it's still a struggle. And a lot of them don't get into uncomfortable situations where you're pressured to speak and learn in that way. And so my Spanish, I am no way fluent. I am not even close. If we want to have a discussion around heart surgery or auto mechanics or something like that, I would get every 10th word. Outside of that, because I've lived in and traveled in Central America for long enough, my travel, and this is also could be a curse, my travel Spanish, my day-to-day Spanish of home stuff and prices and describing things and that type of stuff is really good. And so when I go out into the community and I'm looking for something or I'm asking about something, the person that I'm talking to thinks I speak much better than I do.
So you're good at conversational Spanish.
Yes, yes. And so
which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. As long as you can hold a conversation, so you can go to a doctor and speak Spanish, or do doctors speak English also?
A lot of the doctors are fluent in English here, but your comment around going someplace. So there are a couple of examples where I bought a car 4 or 5 years ago, so I had to go get it licensed with the state police agency, or just actually last week I had to go to it's called SAT, S-A-T, Hacienda. It's the IRS of Mexico. I had to go there and register for an RFC number, just if you want to do any financial transactions like sell a house or buy a car or something like that, you have to have an RFC now. They require that for this year. And so going through those processes, I know enough Spanish to make it through that. I don't need an interpreter to come with me. I didn't have to use translation apps or something like that. So I was really good about that. That was helpful. So that at that level of my Spanish, I can make it through those processes.
That's great. So tell us about the local economy. Can you provide examples to the audience? What's it like living there, and what are housing costs, whether you may be purchasing or renting versus what your water bills, electric bills, and gas bills might be in taxes?
Yeah, when I came down here 15 years ago, like I said earlier, I had a horrible budget. I'm going to backtrack here a second. I said this to you in a conversation to prepare for this podcast, that one of my traits that I gained from my father, who was an orphan during the Depression era, was I'm painfully frugal. And if I can do it myself, I'm going to do it myself. I'm not going to pay for somebody else to do it, whether that's home maintenance or mowing my lawns or whatever it is. And so when I came down here 15 years ago, you're going to cringe at this. My budget was like $15,000. I came down here to look for an abandoned piece of property, let it sit for a year or two until I saved up enough money again to come back and rehab it. And so when I came down and was working with some local realtors, I quickly found out that my budget was so low, they had no interest whatsoever. Understand, I don't want them to spend 40 hours to earn 50 bucks. And so when I got to know the hostel owner at the place I was staying, his son-in-law at the time, who wasn't working, was fluent in English and Spanish. And so he said, let me connect you with Luis, and you and Luis can go through the city and look for homes. And in Mexico, there's no centralized RMLS listing system. And so a lot of the homes have Se Vende, for sale, written on them, or a phone number or something like that. And so I went with Luis for like 3 or 4 days, and we walked and drove through the city in the area that I wanted to look in Centro, and came across this home that I have now. And there were some workers in there working on it, and it said directo, which means for sale by owner. And we went next door, found out who the owner was, went next door. The price was about $15,000 for the property. And so I asked him, if he stopped work now, didn't do any of the work there, what would he charge me? And it was $12,000. And so we like shook hands. It was a deal. And I had about 48 hours to find an attorney, put down a deposit, sign some papers for the attorney as far as, what's that word called? Power of attorney, because I wasn't going to be able to come back and sign the sale agreement. And that's what it ended up. I ended up paying $12,000 for this house. And then when I came back 2 years later, found an architect who worked within my budget for about $20,000 to rehab the place. And it's a lovely 1,200 square foot home with a large exterior patio, centrally located with a garage. It was all new plumbing, electrical systems, kitchen. I just love it. So with
that's
that
said, fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. With that said, that's probably not going to be the typical person's experience. And so I looked at some of the property sites before this podcast to get an idea. And if you're going to rent a home down here, and again, when I say rent a home, most expats are looking for a swimming pool, air conditioning, 3-bedroom, 3-bath, finished, that type of thing. You're looking in the price range of about $1,500 to $2,500 a month. And depending on where you're coming from in the U.S., it may be very similar to those rental costs, or astronomical if you're in New York or somewhere like that. For a local property, and I'll describe some of these later, there's some local property websites that not many, and I'm going to use this term affectionately, okay, a gringo. Not many gringos would go to or know about. And if you go to these Mexican sites where they're listing real estate, you can find a home, a lovely 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, maybe not in Centro, in a nice neighborhood for $400, $500, $600 a month. So, but you're not going to have a swimming pool. It's not going to be a totally remodeled home. And so the prices can range dramatically. And that's for rentals. For home buying, it's hard to find anything, even a ruin, for under $100,000 today. And so if you're looking for a small finished house, like my home would probably be in the $150,000 to $200,000 range now. And that's it's a smaller home, 1,000 square feet. If you're looking for a larger home, over $1 million. I mean, there are some stunning mansions in this town, or new builds that people have built that are 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square feet. Large lots, Olympic-sized swimming pools practically, just gorgeous homes. I have a friend who lived 4 blocks from me, that bought a historical mansion in Centro, and they owned it. They bought it the same time I did. I don't know what they paid for it, didn't ask, but they sold it for over $1 million a year and a half ago, and then had a home built. So
I think you did so good. 12,000.
Isn't that amazing?
1,000 square feet or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you renovated it. You did, and you didn't put in much. What did you put in? The same amount to renovate it, you said?
About 30,000 to renovate it. About 20,000. So I'm into this house with furniture and stuff like that, $35,000+.
Hey, that's you'll never see that today.
No, no. But for a local person to buy a property, and again, if you're not looking in the historical district type of thing, I've seen homes on local Mexican sites for $25,000, $50,000, $75,000 in nice, safe areas. And you're living, there aren't a lot of expats around you, but if that's not where you're looking for, you're wanting to move into a new culture, you can find a reasonably priced house. So yeah.
That's
and then
amazing.
As far as utilities, you asked about utilities.
Yeah.
When I had this home built, I designed it as sort of a lock and leave that when I leave in mid-March or April, when I head back, I have massive metal garage door at the back end of the house that covers the screened in areas. And then in front, there's a massive metal garage door that's rolled down. And I have, they're called rajas. They're metal security bars over an interior patio. So it's like a small prison in
fortress.
Here. It's a fortress. When this thing is closed up, so no one's getting in here. And my backyard has, I'm just looking out to my backyard now. The walls that surround my backyard are 13 to 15 feet high. And so I joke with friends, I'm like, look, if someone, if they were to ever to break into my house, and if they were ever to get probably the most expensive thing is my LED TV. I said, if they were ever to get that thing over the 15-foot high wall, they deserve it.
Good luck to them.
Good luck. I'll just give you the money, okay, if you're going to put that much effort into it. So it's extremely secure. So anyway, lock and leave. I have minimal expenses, and the electric bill when I'm gone is, and this is every 2 months, maybe $10, $15 a month. I have fans running 24/7 and the refrigerator, but that's all, it's charged. In the Yucatan, I don't know if it's this way in other parts of Mexico, the climate is so intense in the summertime. And so the electric company gives a discount for electricity. So when I'm gone, that plays into a factor there as well, because many people are running air conditioning or other cooling devices to keep their homes bearable.
Do you have air conditioning?
I don't. And that's why I'm only here during the cool season. So, gotcha. And that's why I don't rent out this house in the summertime, because I don't have a pool. I have a pool in Portland. I love it. It's a lot of work. And I told myself I'm never going to have a home again with pool. And so down here I don't. And no air conditioning. As I say that last night when I was sleeping under two quilts on my bed, because it's freezing here at this point in time. So electricity can be expensive for a large home. I've seen friends who have electricity bills into the mid to high hundreds, $400, $500, $600 a month. You're again talking 4,000 square feet, air conditioning in every room, pool pumps, you name
right.
it. Water is inexpensive. I pay 70 pesos, which is $3.50 every couple of months.
Nothing.
My home is like most Mexican homes where there's it's called a tinaco, a large water cistern on the roof. And the water system is gravity flow. So there's not a lot of pressure to it. I did have a pump installed on the tinaco. So when I use the washing machine or shower, it kicks on the pressure. So it feels like I have a pressurized system. But in these expensive homes, they have pressurized systems that have water softeners and everything in there. So there's a lot of movable parts in the home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then I know I can be sometimes overly thorough on these things. But with taxes, I pay, with the discount, I paid $100 a year for my property tax down here.
Wow.
So it's really inexpensive.
That's amazing.
In Portland, I pay more in property tax than I do my mortgage. It's ridiculous.
Wow. This is why a lot of expats move to Mexico.
Yeah.
American expats.
Yes. The one thing that we do have that a lot of people in Mexico don't have is because we're located within 50 kilometers, maybe it's 100 kilometers of a coastline or a national border, we have to set up, it's called a fideicomiso. It's a trust with a bank. So
right.
My property is in title with the bank. And so when I go to do anything, when I pay my taxes or something like that, the bank will show up as the owner. And so my annual fee with the bank is probably about $400, give or take. It fluctuates with the exchange rate. So yeah. So
but
that's
this is because you're near a coast or?
Because I'm within maybe it's 50 kilometers because I'm within 50 kilometers of a coastline. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about the climate In the summer, have you ever been there in the summer?
Yes, and that's why I don't come here anymore in the summertime.
Is it like really hot and humid Florida? Oh,
it's brutal. It is brutal. And before I talk about the climate, I'm going to go back to how the climate takes a toll on houses. Because even though I don't have a lot of expenses to this house, maintenance on a property in this region is constant. I mean, the climate, the humidity, the heat, pumps are constantly going out. There's interior wall deterioration in the home because there's no vapor barrier and it wicks up the moisture from the water table. So the plaster is coming off the walls. I've replaced plumbing fixtures like every 2 years because the hardness of the water system here is horrible. The lights, I've got to replace lights because of the humidity damages the electrical connection. So even though I don't have expenses of utilities and taxes, the expense of maintaining a home is immense. And that's because your question around the climate. It's brutal. From about mid to late April through September, easily you're close to 100 degrees. Humidity is 99% in the evenings, but may cool down into the low 80s. And so it is just brutal. And so you're living indoors for those time periods in air conditioning. It's just so hard to live here during that time.
Sounds similar to Florida.
Yeah.
It's hot in here in Phoenix too. It's only dry, but it's still hot. It's like walking into a brick oven.
Yeah. So yeah. Here it's walking into a sauna. What are those ovens called? Yeah, sauna. Thank you. I was going to say there's those ovens that steam oven. It's like walking into a steam oven. It's kind of cute when you're walking around downtown, you'll see a lot of the locals, especially women that have a baby powder that's like coming out of their neckline and under their, because
they're sweating.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I can imagine.
The other thing that makes it nice around, not necessarily the heat, but the rest of the year, the climate is homes are so open. You're open to the climate. It's you're pretty much living outdoors, even though you've got screened in areas and stuff like that, but you're just so susceptible to the exterior weather.
Yeah. And so the other part of the year, like the winter, spring, and fall, they're gorgeous, right?
Gorgeous. Just lovely. The temperatures are generally mild. We're talking mid-80s. This week, I think it's going to get up into the 90s. But the humidity is not bad, so it doesn't make it feel stifling. The evenings cool down to the low 70s, to the low 60s, somewhere in that temperature range. It's kind of funny. I was heading back home 6 or 7 years ago, and it was really cool. Oh no, it was before I retired and came down for 6 months. So I came down here in December and was leaving in January, and I had shorts on and a t-shirt coming from a cool climate. I thought I was in Nirvana. And then the taxi driver pulled up and had a wool cap and gloves on and a down coat. And, heat is relative. Cold and heat are relative, depending on what you're using.
It certainly is. Before I forget, you mentioned water. Can you drink the water, or do you need bottled water?
You can't drink the water. Some people, I have a number of friends that put in osmosis systems in their homes. Again, they have every bell and whistle you can think of in these homes, some of these homes. And so you can go and just drink from the tap or the water dispenser in the refrigerator. The vast majority of homes do not. So you can't drink the tap water. I use it to brush my teeth. I'm not worried about that. I use it for cooking. If I'm boiling something, I'll use the tap water, things like that. But they have water delivery services here. They're called garrafons. They're like 20-liter size, 5-gallon size water things that you put on your dispenser in your home. And a lot of expats down here are like, where do I get water? How do I get water? I can't, the delivery guy never seems to come by. And here was my story to them. It's because you don't tip your water guy very well. Because my water guy, he comes every other week. I'll send him a text and say, hey, all in Spanish, hey, Eduardo, can you stop by tomorrow morning? And I'm the first stop on his daily routine. And he'll drop off 4 and it'll be 120 pesos, which is $6. And I'll give him 50 or 60 pesos more just because during the pandemic when I was here, I was his first stop. You know what I mean? Mm. And so And so for expats,
you know how to work it.
Yeah, you spend a little bit more money, and you're gonna be high on their list.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
I should say, so Mark, before I forget,
yeah,
you have another website outside of the Facebook website.
Yes, I do.
Because a long time ago, whenever you started that, I uploaded a bunch of pictures of my home. So if people have access or want to go to that site, they'll see photos of what I'm talking about with my house.
Okay. So I currently have two websites. My first one, now that you mention it, it's at www.wheregaysretire.com.
Okay.
The new one that houses all of the podcast episodes is www.wheredogaysretire.com.
Okay.
So the do is in the latter one, and without the do is the original one where you posted your pictures.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing that up.
The shameless plug. You didn't ask me to do that, but yeah.
So you mentioned $6 for water. That, how long does that $6 water last you?
Oh, it's 2 weeks. I'll go through 20 gallons about every 3 or 4 days for drinking water, cooking water, ice, that type of stuff.
$6 is great.
Yeah, it's very inexpensive.
Inexpensive. How about an arts and culture scene? What's that like in Merida?
Again, when I was down here initially in the first 3 or 4 years that I had retired and came down here for 6 months, it's huge. Merida has, Merida has a large cultural scene down here with art galleries, nightly performances, drama, entertainment, musical performances, a lot of locals as well as people regionally, people from Cuba, other parts of Mexico, Central America. A lot of South American stars come up here. There's a large open area a couple blocks behind me called La Plancha that the city, it used to be an abandoned train station, railway yard, and the city made plans to make it into like a central park for the downtown core of the city. And I want to say 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, Shakira performed in the park back there. And so the city does a phenomenal job about providing 100 free events for the local people. And I'm telling you, if you go to an event, it's packed. 98% are locals that are at these performances. We're just coming off a month-long series called Merida Fest, where I went to see, like, for lack of a better word, a troupe of young people that are kind of the Cirque du Soleil of young people in Cuba that performed, African dance, a group that came up from the Caribbean, musical events, art shows. It's just huge. And then they do something a couple times a year called Noche Blanca, where they have 24 hours that goes throughout the night of different art performances happening throughout the city. And every night there's two dozen things going on. It can be exhausting. I used to go to a lot of them before. Now I tend to be a homebody. So,
do they have live theater?
Tons of live theater. The problem is, and this is where, again, I can get by with my Spanish, but being able to track a conversation in real time can be difficult. And so if you don't know the language, as far as drama performances, comedies, there's a lot. There's comedy clubs here that people go to. I've gone to one before. Turned out I was the butt of jokes in the event because I was the only gringo sitting in there with 200 other people. So the comedian on the stage really took advantage of that, which was cute on one hand. The other thing too, as far as performances, there's 100 or hundreds of cantinas, small local bars in town. And some of them have some really phenomenal live performances. They have open air patios in the back. There's a cantina that's just 3 or 4 doors down from me. Thankfully, they don't have an exterior patio, so I can't hear them. I'm not listening to music every night. But they'll have performances where you can come in and have a beer and different tapas and other things and just sit there and enjoy the entertainment that are very popular. Merida, which I don't know if I said this before, this going back to the gay scene, it's really a city for young people, because if you go out later into the evening, the clubs, the bars, they're packed. There's lines of people coming out of them waiting to get in. And so it's so much going on.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. Really does. So are you a foodie? I'm originally from New York, so I love food. I love different types of cuisine. Can you get like international cuisine? Are there also some Michelin 5-star restaurants in Merida? What's the food scene like?
Yeah, I don't think there's any Michelin 5-star restaurants. Not that I've looked for them, but there are some very high quality, wonderful restaurants in town that cater to the Yucatecan cuisine that do a phenomenal job and that are very popular. The cuisines in Merida, the history of Merida, there is a large Lebanese community in Merida. And so there are some phenomenal Lebanese restaurants in town. There was history here of Korean immigrants. So there's a couple really good Korean restaurants in town. The thing about Merida is it seems like every time I come back, restaurants have closed and opened up under a new name. It's amazing how frequently things close down and reopen. The cuisine that's probably the most popular is Italian. Go figure. I take it back. Good point. Mexican is the most popular cuisine. Once you get out of the Mexican cuisine, then Italian is probably the next. There's Italian restaurants all over this city, some that are unbelievably phenomenal Italian restaurants. And then outside of that, probably Lebanese, Middle Eastern, which I know is kind of surprising. The thing that they probably don't have a lot of, which are difficult to find, Asian cuisine. So Chinese, there are Chinese restaurants here. They're not great. I just have to tell you, they're just not good.
That's not the first time I've heard that. Yeah. Not only from Mexico, but even in Europe, like in Spain, they have a shortage of really good Mexican restaurants there and Chinese restaurants.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I don't know why.
I've eaten at a few of them, and I tell myself after every time I do that, I'm never coming back again. I just don't know why.
Because it's not that good.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, not that I frequent them. Once in a while, I have to think of which one I might do this. That there's every American chain you can think of, fast food chain down here. Carl's Jr., Burger King, Kentucky Fried Chicken, everything. I never eat at them. I had dinner at a P.F. Chang's a month or so ago. But you can, Starbucks, there's a Starbucks. The high-end malls have all of the American chains down here.
That's what I'd like to get away from.
Yeah. And that's why I don't eat at them. The other thing too is when we had talked earlier around businesses and access to Costco and stuff like that, that if just for the cost of living, that if that's something that you need and want, your cost of living here is going to be very similar to what it was in the United States, if not more, because some of those products just being imported into Mexico have some higher duty fees on them. If you want to shop at the local markets, I go down to the main Galvez market and I never see an expat down there. I'm telling you that I never see expats down there. Once in a while, I'll see tourists down there with cameras because they always want the colorful photo of all the produce in the background with the older Mayan woman in her typical Mayan dress, that type of thing. And so I'll see some tourists down there. But I'm the only expat walking around there doing the shopping, buying my papaya and pineapple and bananas and stuff like that. And you can get
by. They should all be there.
Yes, you can get by very inexpensively if you cater your life to the way the locals cater their life and shop where they shop. Once you get into the chain stores, you're not saving any money. I do admit I go to Costco because there are some things I cannot find outside of Costco. And that's a given. But I try to do most of my shopping at local stores.
I would do the same. Definitely would do the same. There's no, why go to a supermarket and pay more money or chains? Yeah, I could see going to Costco once in a while just to get the stuff that Costco has that nobody else does.
Yeah.
Just to store in my home. But as far as local, that's what I want to do. If I move to another country, I want to eat as the locals do.
That's right. That's right. The funny thing is, like I said, I go to the main Mercado and I'm the only expat there. I go to Costco. It's the exact opposite. You're bumping into all your friends. Oh, how are you doing? What's going on? Haven't seen you in a while. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
I wonder, is Costco like the same prices worldwide?
Part I don't know. What I do know is, and again, going back to my frugality, is I figured out that if I buy my Costco membership in Mexico, it only costs me $20 with the exchange rate instead of paying $50 back in the States. And then when I go back to Portland, my Mexico membership works in Portland.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yep. Frugal pays off, let me tell you. So, okay. Is there any public transportation? Do you need a car? It's such a big city that you would think they would have some public transportation, but I'm not quite sure. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, here's the nice thing. When I first started coming down here and when my house was done, I would come down for 3 to 4 weeks a year, all in one lump sum because I didn't split it up for a week here, a week there. And while I was here, when I would get bored, which was not uncommon, I would go to a bus and just hop on a bus and see where it went and drive through the city. There are hundreds of buses here. I'm going to take a guess here. There's probably 4 or 5 main bus operators. So they have their different systems, but the buses go everywhere from about 5 a.m. to about 10 p.m. They've recently started nocturnal buses, overnight buses, which is really nice in some of the high traffic areas because a lot of the locals don't have cars. So the buses are cheap, 8 pesos, 40 cents maybe. I would tell people that if you're concerned about getting lost on a bus, they all come back to Centro. So no matter where they go, if they drive out to a village, they're coming back to Centro. So you're not going to get dropped off in the middle of nowhere, okay? You may have to pay 40 cents for the return trip, but again, you're going to have to splurge a little bit. So the buses are phenomenal. They're quick. When I didn't have a car, I'll talk about that in a second, I would go to catch a bus on its route because I knew the routes back then. And if I missed it, 5 minutes later, another one's coming by. Sometimes 3 minutes later. There are so many buses on the routes. They're quick. They're safe. They can be crowded. No, a couple of the operators have air-conditioned buses. 95% are not air-conditioned. So yeah, so that can be brutal in the summertime.
I'm spoiled.
So having access to buses is great, but when you want to do a lot of shopping, when you've got bags of groceries and things like that, it can be troublesome. For whatever reason, COVID has played havoc on like Uber. Here, it's gotten kind of unreliable where they say, we'll be there in 5 minutes and then a half an hour later, or they don't show or something like that. And so I've heard a lot of frustration around that. So probably 5 or 6 years ago, when I started coming down here for 6 months at a time, I bought a car. And again, frugality, I paid $1 for a little Ford Ka, a little hatchback type of thing. I have a garage on this house, which I love, and because I can store the car when I leave, and then had to go to the State Police Department to relicense this car and did all of that. And it's been a great, reliable little car. I use it primarily for shopping, running errands. I help out friends, that type of stuff. And so having a car is great. It concerned me at first driving. And I tell friends, it's like, when I get behind the wheel of my car and I go somewhere, all of my nerves are on fire. Because there's people coming around on the right-hand side, on the left-hand side. You drive downtown and it's like driving through an ant's nest. There's hundreds of people crossing streets. You've got to look out, dogs, buses barreling down on you. And so you can't daydream when you're driving. You've got to focus on the road. I was stopped at a stoplight and it was 3 lanes of traffic. I was making a left-hand turn and the person in the far right quickly flew out in front of me to cross over in front of the other 2 lanes to make a left-hand turn. That's not uncommon. And you just have to be aware of that. I've never gotten into I was going to say I've never gotten into an accident. I'll tell you about that. But the horrible thing here is if you get into an accident, I don't know if it's like this in all other Mexico, I'm not worried about getting hurt because you're not driving generally that fast. So I'm not worried about getting hurt. What I am worried about is you're going to spend all day there parked wherever you had the fender bender, waiting for the insurance company, waiting for the police. Cars will block intersections. You'll have to make routes around them. And so it's not the accident that I would be worried about. It's having to spend all day there. Yes. Oh, so.
Do they accept U.S. driver's license or do you have to take a new license?
They accept U.S. driver's license. I know lots of people that get a Mexican license and I really have never figured out why. So I had a moving violation once. I had a moving violation once with my, I went on the Periférico, the interstate that goes around the city. And for long story short, I make like an illegal left-hand U-turn on there. And of course there was a state police car coming in the other direction. So they pulled me over. And I gave them my U.S. license. They were really nice. They didn't ask for bribes or shake me down or anything like that. Gave me a ticket and along I went. You know what I mean? But yeah, the U.S. license, it works just fine.
And are you a resident, a permanent resident or a temporary resident of Mexico? How does that also work?
I got permanent residency 7 years ago, I think. And so I bought my house on a tourist visa. So you can buy a house on a tourist visa, but you can't buy a car on a tourist visa. So I don't know why the difference is there. The one thing, I should have said this right at the onset here, the one thing consistent about Mexico is its inconsistency. Because no matter where I go, a friend will tell me, oh, go here. It's simple. Do this. And I go there and it's not simple. They require a different form, a different expectation or something like that. But that's part of the fun being here.
Yeah.
But as far as residency is concerned, I looked this up because I wanted to make sure to give the right information. Because when I came down, the financial requirements were really far less than they are today. They have two processes. If you don't meet the financial requirements to immediately become a permanent resident, then you can apply through it as a temporary resident. And you have to do that, I think, for 3 years. And the financial requirements for a temporary resident, the monthly amount is about $3,200 that you have to show an income for the last 6 months or investments of about $55,000. You have to show you have a retirement account or savings account or something like that. And so if you meet those requirements, get great. And then for permanent residency, the amount again is, I think it's five times more than what was expected for me. The permanent residency is about $5,500 a month that you have to show an income or assets of over $220,000 in retirement account savings or something like that. The other thing that I didn't
talk about. It's a lot more, yeah.
It's a lot more. It goes up quite a bit each year. The other thing that I didn't mention when we talked about buying a house or property, everything is done in cash. So if you're coming down here and you want to buy a $500,000 house, you got to have $500,000 in cash.
No mortgage.
No mortgages. I've never heard, and I know hundreds of people down here, I've never heard of one of them having a mortgage. I've heard of it online. I know of nobody that actually has done a mortgage. They may have taken home equity line of credit out of their property back in the States and used that money to buy a house down here. Gosh. But when you come down and buy a $500,000 home, you have to have $500,000 in cash generally to buy that home.
Does like a $500,000 home buy you like a golden visa, which would grant you permanent residence?
I've never heard of that. No. Okay. Where it does help is in when you're applying for residency, that if you own a property, and I didn't look this up, but I think the amount is like $200,000. If you own a house that's $200,000 or more assessed at that amount, you then can get out of the monthly income requirements or the savings requirements. So they'll take that in trade, okay, that part of the investment. So yeah.
Okay. Very good. So Is Merida a tourist destination? Do people, because like I know Cancun is definitely tourist, but I don't hear of people going to, oh, I'm going to Merida as for a vacation. How many, do you know if what the tourist scene is like?
Yeah. It's huge. So really? if you were to Google top tourist destinations of Mexico and also retirement places, Merida routinely comes up on those lists because of a number of reasons. It's safe. We'll talk about that in a little bit. It's close to a coastline. Progreso, when cruise ships come into Progreso, I'll be downtown and there'll be a lot of cruisers that get off and come into Merida. They have tour buses, open air buses going through the city. Sometimes I'll walk out of my house and there's a tour bus going by. Because it's close enough to Cancun, which is a major worldwide tourist destination, there's a lot of tourists coming in there. And so when they want to go to archaeological sites or other things, they may come into Merida or come over here for a few days. So that's huge. It's not uncommon to be downtown and seeing groups of people, and as you walk by them, they're speaking German or they're speaking French or they're speaking Hebrew or something like that. Very common. So it's a huge, huge tourist destination.
Wow. Another thing that I didn't know. That's why I love these podcasts, because I find out all these different things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it sounds wonderful. Where you are, you're far enough away from the touristy thing, so you're not bothered by it. Is that right?
In hindsight, it would have been nice to know what I know now, 15 years ago. I probably wouldn't have, even though this home, I bought it for, like I said, $12,000. I could have found a home elsewhere for probably less even. But I would look for a home outside of Centro, because Centro is so chaotic. I walk out my front door and it's like walking into an ant's nest. There's constant people going by. It's noisy. I don't hear the noise in my home, but you walk outside and it's constant traffic and noise and activity. So I would look for a home in a more residential area that just wasn't as hectic here. But also when you do that, I can walk out my door and within 3 or 4 blocks. So I'm on between Calle 51 and 53, 4 blocks away on Calle 47, this has happened in the last 5 years. Restaurants have gone in there, and for 3 city blocks, people have purchased homes and put in high-end restaurants, and the city is developing it into a restaurant row. So my point is, I can walk out my front door and be on a street where there are 40 high-end restaurant options. Right. So the walkability is phenomenal. The markets are 6 blocks away. La Plancha, the massive park that's coming in, is 2 blocks away. They're building an amphitheater back there.
And so where you are, it's self-sufficient. You can walk everywhere.
Yes.
You can walk to the market. You can walk to the grocery, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, all of that stuff. The bank.
Yep. Everything. Everything is right here.
Doctors near you?
There are some doctor's offices in downtown, not a lot. So you'll need to go primarily up north to the hospitals, the doctor's suites. There's lots of places where there's office buildings that are filled with medical professionals.
Gotcha. How about, tell us about the crime. What's the crime like in Merida?
Again, if you were to Google, what's the safest state in Mexico? I don't know this offhand. I'm going to take a guess. There are 40 states in Mexico. I don't know what the number is, but there's quite a few. The one that always, always, always is seen as the safest state in Mexico is the Yucatan. It is unbelievably safe. It's rare. I'll see the local papers. Occasionally there's someone, violent crime in a village or something happened here or something like that. You never, ever hear of gun violence in this area.
They don't allow guns, right?
They don't allow guns. I don't know this to be true, so I'm going to give that caveat here. Merida just not is in a transportation route. So like for drug trade and stuff like that, we don't have ships going out on the coast, or we're not close to a border, so there's not cartels and stuff like that here. There's jokes going around that the cartels' families owns homes in Merida just because of the safety. It's sort of an off-limits place. That's a local joke. where they live here because it's so safe. So it's very safe. Very rare you hear person-to-person crime. It's very uncommon. Where you do hear about crime is could be property crime, maybe break-ins in a house, something was stolen. I've had friends with jewelry. They were in the main market and someone grabbed their necklace off their neck, things like that. Petty crime. On Facebook, someone will post, hey, this person just knocked on my door and gave me this crazy story about needing money. And so that type of stuff. But it's never, very rarely is it person-to-person crime. Very uncommon.
That's great. That's great. It's definitely a relief. It's different than when you go back to Portland.
Oh. No, that's another whole hour and a half.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, I can walk out. Because I'm usually asleep. So 10 years ago, I would come back from Jorge's with friends. We'd be traipsing back at 2 o'clock in the morning. Perfectly safe. No one's following us. The streets are well lit. Other people are on the streets. In Merida, this may be common throughout Mexico, nothing starts before 10 o'clock at night. So if you're going out to a party to show, nothing starts before 10. So, yeah.
Do they do siesta?
Yes. The businesses are still open. So even though the doctor's offices may be closed between 1 and 3, they'll open up late afternoon into the evening. I don't know if they're going home to take siesta, but if you're trying to drive somewhere around that lunchtime, it can be a bit chaotic, just a lot of traffic from about 1 to 3.
And restaurants for dinner, they open, what, 8?
They can open early, thank goodness, because I'm usually eating 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, something like that. In Merida, lunch is usually kind of late in the afternoon, like 1 to 3 around that time period. And then dinner, restaurants, there's a beautiful boulevard not far from my house called Paseo de Montejo, which is lined with mansions and restaurants. And it's just beautiful, beautiful boulevard that goes on for about a mile and a half. I walk my dogs up there and back every morning. And so there's lots of places there.
So you feel safer walking your area in Mexico than you do in Portland?
I have to say yes. That's a sad thing to say. I live in a beautiful neighborhood in Portland. Not the highest end neighborhood, probably upper middle class area, mid-century modern homes. I know all my neighbors. There's a rail yard about a half a mile from me. And I was walking my dogs and I'm like, I'm going to want to go for a new route. And I ended up walking down towards the rail yard. I thought I'd entered into a Mad Max movie scene. It was insane with the homeless camps and the RVs and open fires. And it was horrific. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Portland. I was just there recently this last year. So, yeah, I got my first taste of Portland.
Yeah.
And Seattle. So, okay. It's very, very interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about the healthcare also? If you live there as a resident, do they have private insurance and public insurance? Is insurance free? Is healthcare free for the locals and for residents?
Yeah, I have a couple of stories on insurance. What I do is, and I've done this now since I have been coming down here for 6 months at a time, about 7 years ago, I purchase a private healthcare insurance plan. And I pay about $1,000 a year for this plan. And it's an 80%, 20% coverage. I've never used it. I really have it just as a major medical in case, God forbid, something happens and I need it because I still have my health insurance back in the States. And I'm young enough that the rates are pretty good. I have friends that are older, into their late 70s, early 80s, who pay $600-$800 a month for a private insurance plan. They've used it quite a bit and their rates go up significantly each year, so they're paying quite a bit. I also have friends who are on the Mexican healthcare system. And I just looked up those rates. So for an older individual, mid to late 60s, you're going to pay about 20,000 pesos a year to be in that, which is going to be about $1,000, $1,200, given the exchange rate. But I have some stories there. So I'm helping out a friend. who had some major medical issues, and they were on, it's called EAMS, I-M-S-S, the EAMS healthcare system. And their only option was going to a government hospital. And so we brought them via ambulance to the government hospital, and there's no, at least they didn't have access to, no private rooms. You're in a ward separated by curtains. The ability to get certain medications was limited. Their needs were extremely high. I won't go into detail, but just extremely high needs. And they really couldn't get served there. And so we ended up bringing them back home for palliative care. And so that's that story. And I do know people who belong to the Mexican health care system who've gotten great care, but their needs probably weren't as high as this person. Okay. The one thing about and this person also years ago had hepatitis C. And so they have a cure for hepatitis C. And the cure is very expensive. It's like a, like tablets you take for a month or 2 months or something like that. And I looked it up online. To pay that out of pocket was like $75,000. It's very expensive, and it cures hepatitis C. Wow. And so this person got those pills through the EAMS government system and was able to cure themselves of hepatitis C after having it for 30 or 40 years. And so there's some good things. There's some pluses and minuses, but
and they got it for free?
They got it for free outside of their annual fee that they paid. The private system is unbelievable. Many of the doctors speak good English, if not fluent. They're experts in the current medical practices. And so many of them did residencies in the United States, went to medical school in the US or Mexico, very capable and competent medical professionals. The nice thing is, you, if you have an issue that you need addressed and you go see a professional, it can happen quickly. Within a week or two, you can be in for surgery, whatever you need. It's a very quick process. It's all cash. So if you're having a major medical condition, I'll share a personal issue. I'm gonna divert to India for a second here. So I spent 4 months backpacking through India about 4 years ago. And I'm 5'2", and at that time I weighed 180, 185 pounds. So I was pudgy. And so I'm backpacking through India, and I'm utterly terrified about eating the food, because every person I came in contact with had a story that they'd been in the hospital for 5 months with parasites. And they just,
oh my God.
And so I had friends in Mexico and Merida that served in the US State Department in India. And they said, you only eat things that are hot, scalding hot, make sure it's been boiled. And the other thing was only eat things that you can peel, bananas or things that you have control over, oranges, that type of stuff. So anyway, 4 months later, I dropped 60 pounds.
Wow.
Backpacking and going to Mexico. I tried all my life to lose weight and I couldn't. And so I had to go to India to do it. And I dropped 60 pounds down to like 125. And so for the first year, I kept it off. I only ate fruits and vegetables. I never ate processed foods, didn't eat late at night. I really cleaned up my diet a lot. And I exercise. I go ride a bike 20 miles a day. I even do that down here. So here's my story about medical care. So after losing that much weight, I had all of this skin hanging off me that I could do nothing about. And so I went to see a plastic surgeon and wanted to get a tummy tuck and clean all this up, because I'm still young. Back then I was late 50s. And so got recommendations, met with this surgeon, fluent in English, phenomenal guy, went to a private hospital, had this done, cost me $2,000. In the States, it would have been $20,000 to have this done.
At least.
Whenever I'm coming into Merida, I usually have a layover in Houston. There are always people waiting for the plane who's coming here for medical work, dental work, you name it, because it's cheaper to fly in here and have all that done and then fly back home to do that.
Absolutely.
So the private system is phenomenal down here. I had one other medical story. a friend of mine, I bump into him every other morning walking our dogs. He had major heart surgery 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And what he did was he paid for the best cardiac surgeon out of Mexico City to come into Merida with his medical staff and perform the surgery here and then head back to Mexico City. And all of that was less expensive than what he was paying for his insurance back in the United States.
Isn't that something? That's kind of beautiful.
The one little quick story here is, if you don't want to go see a doctor, the consultation fee is 400 to 700 pesos. So what's that? $20 to $35 to consult with a doctor. Almost every pharmacy has a consultorio where you can pay 30 or 50 pesos, walk in there, see a doctor, skilled physician. A lot of times they work in the Mexican healthcare system or they have a private practice somewhere. So you'll pay 30 or 50 pesos, go in and describe your scratchy throat and, geez, I've got this. And so they may prescribe something for it. And you're paying nothing for that. Because in Mexico, when you used to be able to walk into a pharmacy and buy anything, you can still get a lot of stuff nowadays, but they control opiate-based, narcotic-based medications that you can't get without a prescription, and antibiotics. You need a prescription for antibiotics. But most everything else, you can just walk in and say, hey, I would like this or that, or show them the box of the old medication and get it.
Right. It's the same here. Like on the Arizona border with Mexico here, there's, if you cross over from Yuma into Mexico, there are tons of like dentists, modern, that have the best modern facilities. Yep. And people just go over the border and they're lined up and they just choose a place and they get great care for nothing.
That's right. Amazing care. This is a funny story. And the private hospitals here, amazing. The care, the quality, cleanliness, outstanding. And so when I had my surgery, I went to a little tiny private clinic and it kind of scared me at first because I saw the doctor that morning. He came in and then his staff invited me back into for the surgery. And so I'm literally sitting in the lobby and a nurse comes out and calls me back in. And so from the lobby, I walk through these double doors and that's the operating room from the lobby in. And that kind of concerned me a little bit. It was all fine. It was all fine.
That's good. Yeah. There's a lot to say about healthcare. That's one of the number one reasons where you want to decide to move to. It makes a big difference.
That's partly why I said this earlier, why I don't socialize as much as I do, because when you meet new people here, the conversations are always the same. And I fell into this as well.
Yeah.
Where did you buy your house? How much did you spend for your house? What did you do? Who was your architect? And then, where do you get your medical care? Who do you see for your gastroenterology? It's always the same conversation.
All that doctor stuff. Yeah. The more you get older, that's all you hear. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about visas and residency. Mm-hmm. Do you obtain your visa through the United States through a consulate, or do you do it from Mexico?
Nowadays, you have to start it in the United States. And so, and when we talked about income requirements, either for temporary or permanent resident, the funny thing is consulates have a little bit different rate in there. I don't think it's dramatically different. You're not going to go to a consulate and they say $3,500 and the next one's going to say $1,000. They're going to be $3,500, $3,300. They're all going to be close in there, just how they factor it. But you have to start it in the United States. And then I think you have about 6 months before you have to get back into Mexico then to finalize the process. So you can't apply for it 2 years in advance and then take 2 years. So apply for it. You've got to come into Mexico within the next 6 months. And then you have 30 days once you arrive into Mexico to complete the visa process.
So if you're just visiting on a tourist visa, mm-hmm. or you're just visiting from, let's say, Portland, how many days? Is it 90 days, 180 days? How many days do you have to stay in Mexico before you have to return?
They're cracking down on that a lot. Because in the olden days, you used to just automatically get 180 days. What's that? 6 months. You would come in on a tourist visa and it would be automatic. You'd get 180 days. Now, when you come in through immigration, they're going to ask you some questions. What's your purpose for coming here? How long do you intend to stay? Where are you going to stay? And they may, the immigration officer may put a different time period on there, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. So it's not always automatically 180. So in the olden days where you could simply just fly back to the States and come back in and get a renewed visa, not that way anymore. And I think that's why people are looking at becoming temporary or permanent residents, because they don't have the surety of being able to make it back into the country within that time frame, or having to leave. Because I have friends who are on tourist visas and it's a pain in the behind every so often to have
leaving,
to
leave, come back.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a pain.
Because once I got my permanent residency, I was done. I don't have to pay any annual fees. I don't have to renew it. There's nothing
That's
I need
great.
To do. Once you get that, you're set.
That's great. Okay. Is there anything that you wish that was in Merida that you don't have, that you have in the States? Besides, well, you have Costco both places. So.
Sometimes the variety of restaurants, because again, it gets old eating Mexican food all the time. And so some of the varieties are a little bit for want. I miss, in my home in Portland, I'm 8 blocks away from a Trader Joe's. So I miss Trader Joe's, that type of thing. But really, most everything, if I know I can't find it down here, I will generally bring it with me when I come down each year. So yeah, there's not much. I don't go to them often, but they've built two new massive malls that have 90% U.S. stores in them. And so the Gap and H&M and all of those things that if you're wanting some of those things, you can find them down here.
You can find it.
You can find it.
Excellent. Are there any cons besides living in the centro of the city and being a little noisy? Are there any other cons you can think of?
Again, this is why I split my time. The climate can be brutal in the summertime.
Okay.
And so even people who have air conditioning, and so if you're going to want to live here full time, I would suggest making sure that part of the time you visit is going to be during the summertime, those hot months, because
so
I've known
check
people
it out for yourself.
Yep, to come down and it's like it's too much and they just couldn't take it. Within the expat community, it can be a small town. Because I Googled this, it said something like there were about 12,000 expats in the Merida, Yucatan area. And that probably includes Canadians as well. Mm-hmm. But it can be a really small town down here where sometimes the gossip tree can be a little bit much, especially if you do a lot within the gringo community.
Yeah.
What else? So climate, sometimes it's hard to find things. And this may be more so due to COVID than anything else. Today, Costco's selling their brand butter, and now, because there's a big thing on Facebook the last week, and everyone's writing, has anyone seen the Costco butter? Is it there yet? Has it come back yet? Sometimes those things can be frustrating.
Or how much are eggs?
Eggs are cheap down here. Eggs
are they?
Cheap. Yes, I'm surprised.
They're almost $4 or $5. They're $4 and change to $5 in here in the
buck
in
50.
Phoenix.
Buck 50 for a dozen. 39 pesos. Yeah, $1.75. So yeah, cheap.
Bad at all.
The other thing, the other con is home maintenance. And I talked about this before. It is constant. Every year I come back, I always know there's going to be a half a dozen things I've got to take care of. It is constant, the home maintenance in this area.
Understand, because of the climate.
Yep.
So, Kevin, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking to relocating to Merida?
I would, and I said this earlier, I listened to some of your other podcasts before doing this one. I would do things that I didn't do. I would rent first. I would come down here and rent a place, because there's hundreds of beautiful homes in lovely neighborhoods at all spectrums of cost. I would rent first to see if this is what you want. Because once you buy a house, you're kind of stuck. And I've had friends that have taken them 5, 6, 7 years to sell a home.
Wow.
I've had friends that have taken losses on properties because, again, there's not a lot of public information around what did the property sell for? How does it appraise against like properties? That type of stuff. So it's kind of a wild west with properties. So rent first. The other thing is look at other neighborhoods outside of Centro. Everyone comes down here, me included. It's like, oh, Centro. I want to be in the hub. Look at other places. Got a visit here during the hot months. We talked about that. The other thing is there are gringo sites for looking for properties and gringo real estate agents, and they're going to show you what they think the gringos want. And then there are sites that cater to the Mexican community. And so if you're not looking to drop $300,000 in cash on a house, but want to spend $75,000, there are a lot of options down here to look at. You just have to know where to find them. So do some research around that. And everything's Googleable. Is that a word? Googleable?
Googleable.
So all of this you can find on Google and just research that type of thing. So those would be my suggestions for people. Just make
sure.
Do
your homework.
Do your homework. Because once you come down here and buy a house, if you don't have $300,000 to burn, it's like, I'm going to take a lot. And not a lot of people do. You're investing a lot of money. That's partly why I spent so little money on this property. Because 15 years ago, I'm like, well, if this is funny, I say this. Well, if the Mexican government collapses, I haven't invested that much. Now it's like, oh, the United States. If the United States government collapses.
Yeah. That's so funny.
15 years ago, why I didn't even think about that. So yeah.
You wouldn't. No.
You would have. Who would have? So yeah. So I love it. I love living in Mexico. It keeps me young. The thinking in Spanish, different systems, different. It's a phenomenal experience.
Advice. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. We do appreciate it. It was very informative. I love to learn about different places. You certainly were able to let us know what life is in Mérida. It was all about. So thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
Thank you. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.